bon de partir n'importe où, bras dessus, bras dessous, en chantant des chansons. C'est si bon de se dire des mots doux, de petits rien de tout, mais qui ont dix ans long.
This is Pamela Kuhn, and the curtain is up on Center Stage, the show about the arts and the artists behind their work. You know, some actors just get better as they age, better looking, better at making professional choices, and some just get better at cooking. And my guest today is that guy. He's improving with age while becoming more handsome at the same time.
You're very kind.
I'm speaking of actor and podcast host Chris Sarandon. It is enough that he left us all with the indelible portrayal of Prince Humperdinck in the unforgettable and much beloved film, The Princess Bride. But now with his podcast, Cooking by Heart, he leads us all into the magic of our memories, recalling the emotions around food, recipes, and stories. I mean, what more do we want out of an actor? So Chris is with me right now, and I'm thrilled to have him.
My pleasure, Pamela, my pleasure.
We've been here before, Chris. It is so good to see you. And I think it was just about a year ago when you had first started the podcast Cooking by Heart.
Yeah, so, I think so. That's about right. Yeah.
All right. So how has it gone? How is the podcast developing?
I've had an extraordinary year so far. The guests have been some of them friends, some of them people that I don't know terribly well, but all have an imprint in the world in one way or another. I don't have the list in front of me, but I've had some wonderful times with people like Melissa Gilbert from Little House on the Prairie and the company that she now has for Little House Products. A fascinating woman, really interesting. I've got coming up a number of wonderful guests. In particular, I have a couple of live podcasts coming up, one with Chef Rocco DeSpirito, who's an extraordinary man and has a new cookbook coming out. So I'm doing a show with him at the Country School in Madison, Connecticut in about, I think, 2.5 weeks or so, 3 weeks, on the 29th of April. And then another wonderful, wonderful guest, Alice Waters, the mother, really, of farm-to-table in this country, the creator of the Chez Panisse restaurant in Berkeley, California, any number of cookbooks, the woman who was the inspiration for White House gardens in both the Clinton and the Obama administration. She's also planning a miraculous event on the Mall in Washington coming up this year for people who serve food. So remarkable human beings, as well as people who give so much of themselves in terms of their stories about growing up, about food, and how that has influenced their lives.
This is so wonderful. It's so profound what you're doing, really. I mean, this whole mixture of food and recall.
Yes.
You know, it's poignant. And yes, I know you to be a very poignant person. I mean, I think with your Greek heritage, growing up with a restaurant background, coming from the area that you did, I mean, you're down home.
Yes. And yeah. Yeah. I come from a little coal mining town in West Virginia.
I know. It's amazing. But the fact that you have circled around the Great White Way and also this area of Connecticut, where, of course, you had your first jobs, really, in theater.
My first professional job, but actually my second professional job, but my first real kind of out there in the world job was at the Longmore Theater in New Haven.
Oh, man, and what a theater. I mean, what a theater that's launched so many careers.
Yes.
So important to you and to your ex-wife, Susan Sarandon,
I gather.
Correct. Of course, you've had her on your podcast.
Yes. Actually, she was the premiere episode for season 2. Susan very kindly got in touch with me when she saw that I was doing the podcast and said, hey, this looks like fun. Let's do one. So after not having seen each other in a number of years, we got together literally on stage at the Sacred Heart University Community Theater, and we talked for an hour about her growing up, obviously, because that's what the show's about. But then she and I also talked about our growing up together, because we met very young. I was 21, I think, and she was 18 when we met. And
Wow.
we married some 3 years later, 4 years later, and we were together for a number of years, and we began our careers together as
Yeah.
well.
Yeah.
So we had a lot of both personal and food memories as well, family memories, because I was close to her family, she close to mine. So it was a trip back for me as well as for her. Generally speaking, the guests and I, we talk about their memories
Yeah.
primarily. And then
Yeah,
I'll throw
yeah.
something in that might tie in my background with theirs. But generally, I try to let the guests be the star. That's my job.
That's your job. Did you find with Susan that you two picked up literally where you left off?
Immediately. You don't know somebody for that long and so well, particularly when you start out young and your formative ideas of who you are in the world are created at that time. And she was very kind about, our relationship and how I helped her through some difficult times when she was younger. And it was a great evening.
Is so fantastic. I have to say personally that I'm gaining so much out of seeing you live on stage in these shows. It's one thing for us to be doing this on Zoom. It's another thing to take you back to the theater, to be live, talking to each other, feeling that energy of the person in the room and just letting it all evolve.
Yes, and
It's quite
that's one of
something.
the wonderful things about the particularly about the live shows, which I've done, as you know, with such people as the great chefs Jacques Pepin and Lydia Bastianich, with Susan, with the upcoming shows with Rocco DiSpirito and Alice. They are a real way of for an audience who are followers, if you will, of these people who have read their cookbooks, who've used their cookbooks, to see them in many ways reliving how they came through their lives, particularly in the beginning. The stories from Jacques Pepin and Lydia Bastianich were amazing, just from the standpoint of both of them being very young wartime children as well. Lydia was a refugee for a number of years. And how that propelled them to become who they were, and how it's created such extraordinary human beings, because they're really amazing, amazing people.
Oh, you're going to a new level there, Chris, which I think it's so important because we are bound by food. You and I, when we talked before, we talked about the great movies and series that bind people together with food, that community around the table, that Babette's Feast, for instance. Even when you think of the most simple, the scene like from Moonstruck, there's always food. So was that something that just came to you in the beginning that you just wanted to live out? I mean, I know you have nine grandchildren, you've got this big family, and I get the impression you all come together over your dinners,
Over
and
food.
it's
And all the
actually a
kids,
production.
my and all of my children and Joanna's son, they're all into food. I have a son who's a trained chef, who's not actually cook in the restaurant business now, but is a trained chef. But both my daughters are superlative cooks. And whenever the grandkids get here, we cook together. They're part of the meal, invariably, even the little ones. Sunday morning pancakes are a big tradition with the little ones. And they're cracking the eggs and they're mixing the flour in. And they're part of a tradition that goes back in my life to not only my father, but also my grandfathers, but on both sides, my maternal and paternal grandfathers. So it's kind of the family business, but also the font of so many family traditions in my world and in the Greek culture as
Of
well.
course, of course. During COVID, I spoke to so many people who used food as a means of reaching out all the time in communities, just simply taking a casserole next door. When you grew up with your family in the restaurant business, were your family, were they generous? Were they bigger than life in that way with food?
Many of them were. I know that I can't include my father in that regard. My father was bigger than life in the sense that he was, when he was 12 years old in a small Greek village in Turkey, he was sent to Romania because his family couldn't afford to keep all the children. They had five children. And so he and two of his brothers were sent to work for an uncle of theirs in Romania when they were young boys, literally. And that's where they grew up in this bakery. So my father had a very utilitarian, although he was a superb restaurateur in the sense that in his restaurant, everything was made fresh. I remember a huge butcher block in the kitchen of my dad's restaurant, the Eat Well Cafe in Beckley, West Virginia, of walking into the kitchen and there being a side of beef, literally a whole side of beef on that butcher block, and my father carving that side of beef for all the steaks, for the burgers, for the for whatever parts of the cow were available, they were used. Plus, all everything was freshly made, the cakes, the pies, everything. But in regards to his demeanor, he was a much more sort of quiet, sort of reserved man. I think he saw that as being part of his need to become assimilated as a businessman and not be a cartoon, quote unquote, of the Greek culture. There weren't any Greek families in the town. So he became a pillar of the community. He was a bank director. He belonged to the local country club. But then on my mom's side were the opa breaking plates whenever we would go to Florida, where my mother was from. Now here, I'll give you an example. I had an Aunt Lula, an Aunt Sula, and an Aunt Tula. Those three. And that's
Say
just
that
the family,
fast. Oh
right?
boy.
An uncle Costa, who married into the family, who was just one of the most colorful human beings alive. He was a clown in rehab centers and children's hospitals. Whenever I would take my kids to Florida, they adored him because he was just so full of life, as was his wife, my Aunt Lula. They were a combustible couple put together. They were very interesting. But the family background was so I had two sides. I had festive, if you want to call it the kind of what people conceive of as being the Greek culture. And then my father was very much a sort of, on his side of the family, very sort of laid back, quiet businessman was what he was. Kind
Interesting.
of a mixture of both.
Your dad made the most of coming to America, that's for
Oh,
sure.
yeah. And brought all the family over too. He brought all of his brothers and sisters. They all worked. His brothers worked with him in the restaurant. It was a sort of ubiquitous American
Wow.
story. Yeah, immigrant story.
Well, you talk about him making things fresh. Is there any one recipe that you love to make from scratch and fresh?
Oh, absolutely. And it's Greek, of course. And it's the recipe that I always make for my grandkids when they come, especially in the wintertime. It's a stew that originated. This particular version of the recipe is an island recipe because my mother's family is from the Greek islands, from a little island called Chalki, which is near Rhodes, in that part of the Mediterranean. And at any rate, and it is a mixture of chopped vegetables, carrots, celery, potatoes, and meatballs that are made with rice and tomato. And then cooked very simmered very slowly in a broth. And then the Greek avolemono sauce is added to it. That is, you beat eggs with lemon, and then you slowly add the hot liquid of the stew into it so that it has the flavor of the meat and the turkey and everything, so that the egg doesn't cook, it just thickens. And then you add it to the pot, and then you swirl it around, and it's one of the great kind of satisfying, particularly cold weather meals. It's called Jubarlakia, and every time the kids come, the little ones, Papu, Jubarlakia, Jubarlakia.
It sounds to me like you will like it.
Oh
And that is true.
yeah.
Well, you have another kind of family outside of the obvious one, and that is your family in Princess Bride. And I know the last time we spoke was just before I think you were doing or reading. You were all having a
Oh,
reunion.
this is how far back you and I go. Yes, this was the election of 2020.
Oh, wow.
Correct. And we did for the Wisconsin Democratic Party, we did an organized reading with all of the actors, with the obvious exception of Andre, who is no longer with us,
Of
and
course.
of Peter Falk, who was no longer with us at the time, but the rest of the cast was there. And we did this marvelous reading and raised something like $5 million, $6 million. And we also, by the way, every once in a while, I do autograph conventions. I go to Comic Cons, right? And the last one I did with Cary Elwes and Wallace Shawn and Robin Wright and me. All together at a Comic Con, and we just had a wonderful time. Wonderful time.
I wanted to ask you about that. What is the Comic-Con experience really like? I mean, I've talked to several of my guests who've done it via the Star Trek route.
Right.
And one of my guests told me that she had avoided Comic-Con for the longest time and then for years, and then suddenly found this profound family when she attended one, and now she's thriving with them.
Yes, it's really quite an extraordinary kind of dynamic that occurs when you are sitting at a table and you're talking to people who are part of a crowd of maybe between 50 and 100,000 people in a huge convention center somewhere. And it is, despite the fact of the numbers, it's a very personal experience because you're one-on-one with fans. And I often talk about this when, in the theater, we have the advantage of being exposed to, that is, we interact with the audience in a very profound way in the theater because it's never the same. Even though you're doing the same play every night, the audience informs the performance. So you are, in many ways, communicating with the audience. You don't have that when you're doing movies and television. But in this respect, you do have that. The ability to interact with fans who tell you about their experience with the films that you've done, which are obviously not living events. They are something that was created in the past, but to them, they are very, very present in their lives. They watch them when they're feeling low. They watch them when their families get together. They share them with their children who become fans of the movies as they grow older and share them with their children. So it becomes a multi-generational experience and also becomes a very much a symbiotic experience in that you are trading, in a way, the love of the movie, because I have it. I love the movies that I'm there talking to people about. And at the same time, they're sharing with you their experience with their family, and it becomes very personal and very humbling in a lot of ways.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
And here you are, you've experienced and been in several of the most wonderful films of our time. I mean, when I think of you in The Princess Bride being part of that integral family, and my entire family goes to that film when they're feeling low, when they want to be uplifted, when we
Yeah,
want
right.
something special. And that's across the generations. You're absolutely right. But even looking at Fright Night, The Nightmare Before Christmas, which you
Well, the
voiced, of
Nightmare Before
course.
and Tim Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas is just it talk about a movie having a profound influence on the culture.
Yes. Oh, indeed.
That movie has become Halloween
Yeah.
and Christmas. Rolled into
Yes,
one.
it has. It
It's
has.
crazy. It's really crazy.
And the magic, of course, of Tim
Yeah,
Burton.
and it's and also it's an extraordinary experience to watch because it's so beautifully done.
It is, and indeed, indeed. But here you've been a part of the most special movies in the world. I mean, you could just stop right there. We haven't even talked about your Oscar-nominated performance in Dog Day Afternoon with Al Pacino. I mean, you've had such an incredible and varied life, and now you're capping it off with food and inviting us all in. And I understand you're also writing your memoirs.
Well, yeah, I kind of got going on that particularly strongly during the pandemic, but then the podcast sort of took over my personal time, in terms of my creative time. And I keep saying, all right, I'm going to go back. I've got it. Essentially, I have a couple of 300 pages already written, and I need to go back and work on it again. But this has taken up more of my time, at least right now. But I'll return to it at some point.
Oh, I hope so. We
Yeah.
all hope so. We all,
Oh.
when you have time from cooking and
Yeah.
taking care of the grandkids and
Yeah.
receiving
Yeah.
your guests on stage, I
Yeah.
love
Yeah.
it. So tell me one of your special moments in a podcast, and I know that's going to be absolutely impossible, but can you highlight just one story that someone has shared with you that stays with you, that you still reflect upon, especially like when you're in the kitchen?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have there's so many, but the ones that affect me most, I think, are the stories like the story that Jacques Pepin told. He was an apprentice in a restaurant. He started apprenticing in a restaurant. His mother was a restaurateur This is after the war, because his mother was taking care of the children while his father was in the resistance. I mean, it's one of those great wartime stories. And he apprenticed in a restaurant, in a well-known restaurant, when he was 13 years old, right? And he'd been in the restaurant for a couple of years, and the only thing he was allowed to do was to stoke this huge stove in the restaurant. And he was watching, because there were no recipes. The whole idea for the apprentices was you just watch until you are ready. And then when you're ready, you'll be able to cook. So one day, it was on a holiday, I believe, and Jacques was living in the quarters near the in the restaurant. And one of the people who worked downstairs ran into his room. He was about to go to sleep and said, "There are guests. There are guests. There are no cooks here. There are no cooks. You have to cook a meal." And Jacques, who is a wee man anyway, was very on the small side. He was at the time, I think, 15 or 16. So he put on an apron, went down to the kitchen, and these people were not just sort of off the street. They were very well-heeled, and they were expecting an amazing meal. And he managed to get the stove going again, this huge edifice that was in the middle of the room. And after the meal, he went back to his room, and there was a knock on the door. And he opened the door, and the head of the party stood there and said, "Bravo, chef." Fantastic meal, in French, of course. And it was the first time he had ever cooked for anybody other than, you know, working in his mother's restaurants. And that's when he became Jacques Pepin.
From that time forward, he
was allowed to work on the stove, and he moved on into other restaurants. And his life, what a life, God. And the other one that, if we have a moment, that I remember vividly is a story that Michael Tucker told. Mike Tucker from
LA Law.
And any number of other things. I'm sure folks remember Mike really well, and who is an accomplished writer and a fabulous human being, tells a story about his parents were at odds very often. And they took him once to a crab fest sort of cookout at some people that they knew in the store that his father, I believe, worked in. And his parents were kind of very starchy and were kind of always at each other. And he says he remembers vividly he was put in some sort of a weird outfit when he was 7 years old. And there was this kind of crab fest bacchanal where he went out on the boat with the host, who was a very kind of hail, well-met fellow, totally the opposite of his parents. They pulled up the crab pots, they took the crab in, and by the end of the evening, his parents were embracing, the children were laughing, it became an all-night affair, the crab shells were piled up on the table, and by the time they were finished, it was time for breakfast.
It had
become an all-night affair, and he looked over at his parents and he thought, "My God, why hasn't this happened before?
Before.
This community that occurred, this conviviality, this wonderful evening over food changed the dynamic."
Oh, Chris, that's so wonderful. Yeah. Miracles can happen.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And you know, I've got to say, you're like the Pied Piper right now, leading us into a whole other realm.
Oh, you're very sweet. I don't know if it's quite that extensive in terms of its following, but certainly it's something that I enjoy doing a lot.
But you know, Chris, in these days when we are troubled in the world, I think we need the simple pleasures.
Oh, yeah.
Of talking, of sharing,
yep.
You know,
yep.
And you're laying the table literally for this, and you're inviting us in. And I feel like a special guest, you know.
Huh.
Whenever I watch one of your podcasts, you add so much. Just tell me quickly. I mean, I know I'm running my own podcast, you know, it can get tricky, but what is the most difficult aspect of having your own podcast?
Just at the moment, I don't have a producer. So I basically am booking the show. That's the hardest part, is just getting, you know, people to getting dates and times
for
actually doing it. Because once we're doing it, it's, you know, it's
fine.
Yeah, it's cream. It's wonderful.
I would think you would have no shortage of potential guests, Chris Sarandon.
So far, we've been very lucky. Yeah.
It's a life of work that brings people into you. And I want to thank you for that. And I want to
thank you for being
on the show and sharing with me. And I'm going to look for you in all the obvious sequels. I mean, I think there should be a sequel in something coming up in the near future.
Well, actually, we're doing what's called a table read that's being recorded in Los Angeles of Fright Night. That's going to be, I guess, available in some way commercially. And we have a couple of really interesting guest stars because, of course, Roddy McDowall is no longer with us.
Right.
And Mark Hamill is playing Roddy's part. And a woman named Rosario Dawson,
who's
this extraordinary actress, is playing a lot of the female parts in the show, except for the female lead, who's still with us. And the original cast, the original cast, and we're doing that in a couple of weeks.
That's so exciting.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, great fun.
You and I last saw each other on a plane to Nashville, and maybe I'll be seeing you on a plane to Los Angeles at some point.
Okay. I'm going there, around the 19th, but I'll just be there for a day, and then I'm coming back.
I hope you have a wonderful time with that.
Thank you so much, Pamela.
I hope it breeds wonderful possibilities.
Oh, I think so. It's always fun to recreate something without any pressure.
Yeah, exactly.
Just that we get a chance to get together because the cast of that show, as well as the cast of The Princess Bride, we're very close and we communicate, and it's a lovely, lovely group of people. So I'm anxious to see them and also to do this thing again. What the hell?
What the hell?
Yeah.
Well, I've got to tell all my listeners to please go to chrissarandon.com for more information on cooking by heart. And you need to try to nab an apron. There are aprons for sale, very special.
Yep,
with this logo.
Some gloves, oven mitts.
The gloves.
Oven mitts. And we're doing two live shows coming up, one in April 29th at the Country School in Madison, Connecticut with Rocco DiSpirito, mm-hmm. and with Alice Waters at the Sacred Heart University Theater on May the 23rd. It's going to be a fascinating, fascinating series of evenings.
And I can't wait to be there. And thank you for sharing, Chris Sarandon. This has been marvelous.
Thank you, Pamela.
Thank you for persevering. Good luck with everything. And don't be a stranger to us.
I will not. Anytime.
And to everyone out there, I want you to go to centerstagewithpamelacoon.com for more shows like these. We bring the masses together, whether it's through food or music and art, but it's all the same. It's all the same art canvas. Thanks again, Chris. I hope you'll come back soon. To everyone, stay safe out there. This is Pamela Kuhn, and the curtain is now down on Center Stage.
Il sera très crazy, non? Voilà, c'était mon...